This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Join now, Transpositions, a safe place for trans communities, our friends and our allies to share our experiences. We'll discuss our issues, our challenges and our successes. We'll occasionally make you cry and hopefully we'll educate and inspire you. Welcome to Transpositions on Joy 94.9.
Good evening, Melbourne. It is exactly 8 o'clock and Tuesday night. That means it's Transpositions. I'm Megsy and I'm your host with, of course, good old Michelle. Michelle, how are you tonight?
I'm doing well, sweetheart. How are you?
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. We have got an absolute bumper show lined up for you guys tonight. So we are going to be talking about lots of different things. We're going to be talking to Senator Janet Rice. She's a federal senator from the Greens party. We're going to be talking to her around about 8:15 tonight. So make sure that you are tuning in and listening to Janet Rice. We're also going to be talking to our lovely good friend, Dr. Michelle Telfer from the Royal Children's Hospital. She's starting to become a bit of a regular here on Transpositions, which is great. And she's an amazing resource. And we're going to be dispelling some rumours and facts, and we can talk about facts and those kinds of things. Michelle, you got something to say there?
No, I was going to say, there's just been so much going on. And yeah, we have had quite a few regulars coming on. Joe Hurst, the Gender Fairy, Michelle Telfer. I mean, it's just been a mad beginning of the year with so much going on.
Yeah, it's been rather crazy. Now, obviously, as we've seen, there's a lot of wild accusations and things being thrown up in the media and in the press. So maybe we might talk about some of those things and maybe sort of, as I said, we might dispel some of those myths and rumours.
You are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. My name is Michelle
and I'm joined by Megan. Hey, guess what time it is?
It's time for the news.
The news, actually.
I tell you, babe, I was trying to find positive things. I was trying to find things that really stood out.
That's a really good idea.
We've been beating the safe schools thing with a big stick. It's the bathroom thing as well. I tried my best to pick out the top stories that I could out of the news.
The stick got longer last night, but
I know it got longer. So
yeah.
Well, the big things that stood out. New Texas policy violates Title IX by discriminating against transgender athletes. So basically, the transgender rights in Texas took another step backward last month when public school superintendents voted 586-32 in favor of a rule that requires students to use birth certificates to determine the gender of student athletes.
So is that like a ticket to go into the that's crazy.
Well, this law is seen only as an attempt to handicap transgender student athletes eligibility but it's also believed to be a clear violation of Title IX. The Department of Education has stated that Title IX covers trans students and prohibits discrimination based on gender. It's a full-on one, this one.
And so does it talk about with trans kids, obviously in the U.S., whether they're on hormones or not?
This is in the States. It doesn't matter. It basically, they're going off of what your birth certificate says and what you're born as. What gender you're born as.
That's crazy.
So, and this will officially be enacted on August 1st. So it's actually gone and become active.
That's okay. Okay. All right. Not okay.
Now, there's another one that was in there. Transgender kids, no harm, possible benefit from early social changeover.
Okay.
Pubescent transgender kid children who socially transition to the opposite sex have good mental health outcomes with only slightly elevated rates of anxiety. Results of a nationally representative study indicate. An analysis of more than 70 transgender children that included their non-transitioned siblings and matched controlled children showed that social transitioning, which involves, for example, changing names, clothing, pronoun use, and hairstyles, did not increase rates of depression and anxiety above clinical and preclinical levels. So it's actually the things that they're trying to say, even like last night, that there's issues around, you know, mental health and whatever. They're actually saying here the studies have shown that if they actually it's clear evidence that they have levels of anxiety and depression no different from other non-transgender kids and peers and siblings.
Okay.
Now, there's a big one coming out of South Dakota. I don't know, we've talked about this one before.
South Dakota again, you know, that state's always in the news. In a good way or a bad way this time?
In a bad way, but it's a good and bad. So tomorrow is the decision day in South Dakota. Will Governor DeGarde veto controversial transgender student bill? It's decision time. And so where should the state's students go to the bathroom? The governor is up against a hard Tuesday deadline to sign or veto a historic and highly controversial bill that requires students use school bathrooms and locker rooms that correspond with their gender at birth, as opposed to their gender identity. And if he doesn't actually act on it by the end of Tuesday, it actually automatically becomes law.
Right.
And so, yeah. And so, yeah. Basically, the person who originally introduced the legislation told the New York Times he wrote the bill in order to protect the innocence of the children.
Okay.
I know. You and I are both kind of like basically clawing at the
like
desk
that.
Here.
Okay, look.
Okay, I needed to lighten the mood.
Let's lighten the mood.
Okay. Despite what anyone says, I'm actually... I talk to a lot of different people, mm-hmm. okay? And I'm talking cisgendered people, my ex-wife, a lot of friends, things like that. You know what? There's a lot of positive attitude towards Caitlyn Jenner.
Okay.
On their front. We have
so that's from cisgender people?
Cisgender people.
Okay.
There's a lot of positive a lot of feelings coming from about her. Now, yes, there's people who have issues with her around privilege and stuff, but I'm telling you, overall, she's done a lot of good stuff.
Okay.
So anyway, so Caitlyn Jenner, she's back in the news, and she got a new lipstick which raises money for transgender charities.
Okay.
She's joined forces with MAC Cosmetics to design a new lipstick, the name of the shade, Finally Free.
It's quite appropriate.
Quite appropriate. The best thing about it, 100% of proceeds raised will go towards supporting transgender charities as part of the MAC AIDS Fund Transgender Initiative. Okay. And you can get your hands on Finally Free come April 7th.
Well, that sounds like if the funds are actually going towards a good charity, well, you know, that sounds like not such a bad idea.
That sounds a bad idea. Matt Cosmetics is on board with the transgender community and would bring in Caitlyn as the face of it. So,
well, there you go. Well, it's not maybe so bad as like what we might sort of normally get expected to with Caitlyn Jenner. So
other than bathrooms, other than safe schools, other than this is what we have. Okay. We're gonna beat all the other stuff for the show. So
because tonight, yeah. Look, as I say, we've got a really special guest coming up. At
a few special guests.
I'm actually really. Do you know what? I'm really nervous.
You and me both.
I know. It's not very often you get to speak to a senator.
No, it isn't.
So I'm really looking forward to it. So in about 5 minutes, we will be talking to Senator Janet Rice from the Greens. And then, as I said, later on in the show, we will be talking to Dr. Michelle Telfer from the Royal Children's Hospital. So make sure that you do stay. Don't go far. We do have a really good show lined up for you tonight. We are talking myths and rumours, and we're going to be trying to dispel some of them, as well as talking about some things. Yes.
And if there's things that you actually did miss out on over the past couple weeks around some of these topics, you can go back and get our podcasts have been updated, and you can download those and keep up to date with some of the things that we've been discussing around the same topic. We have a guest on the phone, don't we?
We do have a very special guest on the phone, and I think a very special guest is Senator Janet Rice. Hello, Janet. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks, Megan and Michelle.
Welcome, Janet.
Welcome. Now, Janet, actually, before we go anywhere, I want to give you a special round of applause.
Oh, thank you.
I thought you'd appreciate it. Now, the special round of applause is actually for two things. Three things, actually. First one is congratulations on your 30-year wedding anniversary today.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I believe your partner, Penny, is 30 years today, and big congratulations. And I feel kind of blessed and kind of honoured that you've taken time out of your very special day to talk to us.
Look, it's my pleasure. I mean, we're both out at the dinner tonight. It's a sitting week in Parliament this week, so parliamentary business. So Penny came up to Canberra just yesterday, and so we're at a science meets Parliament dinner this evening. So I popped out of that to speak to you.
I'm glad that you actually took the time to come and talk to us. So the other thing I was also going to say is, well, thank you so much for everything that you've done for the trans community. Look, last week was a very big week for not only the trans community, but the larger LGBTIQ community. Also, I believe Monday last week was a very special day when a lot of transgender children, obviously parents and medical professionals as well, came to Canberra to talk to not only yourself, but other politicians with regards to access to cross-sex hormone therapy for children and not having to go to court.
That's right. It really was one of the very best days I've had here in the Parliament. It was just incredible to have. We had about, I think, 30 or 40 people of, you know, parents and kids, and it was just, you know, almost like a festival atmosphere of having all these families crammed into one of our committee rooms, and to tell their such moving stories and such a strong message of saying, you know, asking us for reform so that they and other trans young people in their situation don't have to go to the family court in order to be able to get their cross-sex hormones. And it was, you know, the overwhelming sense that I got was, here are just, you know, families going through extraordinary times, but just how normal they are. You know, there were parents with young kids and they were just all over the place. It was just terrific. It was incredibly moving and an incredibly powerful thing to do.
They're just normal parents and normal kids, aren't they?
They are, definitely.
Exactly. And you know, the other politicians who were there, you know, you didn't get this sense of, you know, here are these strange, weirdo trans kids. You know, it was here, this room of normal families, normal kids, normal parents, and they just want to be able to get on with living their normal lives.
Was there much said after everyone had left, like everyone remaining there that the kids came to see? Was there much discussion afterward, or all just positive vibes and feelings?
Look, it was pretty positive. And I mean, this event put on by the Parliamentary Friends of Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, Transgender, Intersex and Queer Australians. And so it was, which I'm one of the co-chairs of the Parliamentary Friends group, along with Warren Inch and from the Liberal Party and Graham Perrett from the Labor Party. And between the three of us and the other politicians in the room, there was a real sense that this was something that we could move on together. There was cross-party support for. In fact, we had officers from George Brandis's office there as the Attorney General, and we have been told that George Brandis is, you know, actively looking at the issue. So unlike some other issues where we strike roadblocks, like, you know, marriage equality and, you know, the work of the Safe Schools Coalition, this one at least seems to be an area that at the moment there is of cross-party support for, and I think we can really be looking forward to getting some progress. So that was a, you know, a real high, not just to hear these stories, but to have the sense that, yes, we are in a position of being able to get some really positive and outcomes and really help these kids just and their families to get on with their lives.
Which is a really good thing. When we talk about progress, what sort of time frame are we talking about for these kinds of changes to happen? Is it something which happens quickly?
I'm the optimist. And from what the legal experts tell me, it's not a big change in the legislation that's required. So it's the sort of thing that if the government, essentially the ball is back in the government's court. I mean, we could go off and do lots of work and draft legislation that would change it, but we're actually much better off given that the government is interested and seems to be quite engaged with the issue, for them to use the resources of the relevant government department to do to draft up the legislative change. So it's the sort of thing that you would think surely should be able to be done, you know, within the space of a year. Of course, this year we've got, you know, election that might get in the way, but that's the sort of time frame that I'm hopeful that we'll be able to get some progress.
So when we talk about legislation changes, I know that one big thing which affects a lot of trans people and those who are in relationships is forced divorce. Do you know anything which is sort of happening within that space at a broader national level?
And at this stage, I mean, probably I think the way that we're going to get around the issue of forced divorce is to, once we finally see the marriage equality changes that will happen in this legislation. No, but at the moment, it's just this crazy situation, you know, that my partner Penny and myself, celebrating our 30 years of marriage this year, are only able to do it because Penny decided that, you know, it was better for us to stay married than for her to change her gender and her birth certificate. So it's, you know, it's still this complete anomaly, and anybody you explain the situation to just thinks it's crazy, and, you know, why are we still having this situation here in Australia? But it's not something that seems that it's going to move very quickly. So, you know, all the more reason to, I think, to be getting marriage equality and achieving that. So it doesn't matter what gender, what your sexuality is, that two adults who love each other should be able to be married and stay married.
That sounds fair enough. I've got another question, actually. One of the big issues which faces trans people, already we know that trans people are so financially marginalised, access to healthcare in order to have access to either access to hormone therapies or medical specialists or surgical treatments, obviously out of reach of a lot of individuals for trans people, particularly when you start talking about surgeries, and it's not just lower surgery, it's all transgender-related surgeries.
Look, it's a real big one, that's right, and it's something that we as Greens will continue to keep lobbying for, and that, you know, all of the surgical procedures and, in fact, all of the, you know, the counselling should be able to be covered by our public health system. And at the moment, you know, we know that that's not the case. But, you know, there's no reason why it shouldn't be covered by Medicare, so we're going to keep on advocating for that to be the case. And, yes, you know, it starts, you know, the cost of actually accessing the care and the support you need. You know, one of the issues, you know, going back to the trans young people, of, you know, the having to go through the family court, you know, even with getting pro bono legal support, the families were telling us that it's usually costing their families around $20,000 to $30,000, which means it's actually only available to a very small minority of families. And, you know, speaking to Dr. Michelle Telfer at the Royal Children's Hospital Gender Clinic, who was one of our on our panel last Monday, she says that, you know, the majority of the teenage kids who are attending the clinic make the decision that no, they'll wait until they're 18 to access hormones because they just can't afford to go through that process. And it's obviously not good for their outcomes, much better off for them to be able to access hormones when they need them at the age, you know, 14, 15, 16.
Definitely. Well, I was going to say, look, you know, these kinds of things are really good. And, you know, I suppose ultimately some of these changes are also going to be incumbent upon some of the homophobic donors laws that exist within Parliament.
Absolutely. Yes. You picked up that phrase there. It's a good one, isn't it?
It's a really good one. I think someone actually called it out for a point of order, but...
That's right. We were told that, no, it wasn't a point of order. And, in fact, somebody else said to me on Twitter after I called Corey Bernardi a homophobic dinosaur, that was about the most polite thing that they could think of to call him. Yeah, and yes, I mean, from last Monday was such a huge day, because having had the trans young people and spent the day on a high, and then we got to 10 to 10, which is when we finish up on a Monday night, and, or at least the main business of when voting in the Senate could be held until, and then you have what's called the adjournment debates, which anybody gets to stand up and speak for 10 minutes or so about something that is, you know, dear to them. And the first cab off the rank last Monday night was Corey Bernardi, where he gave such a vile speech full of hatred and full of just really hurtful stuff about same-sex attracted and gender diverse people, and essentially denying that they existed. And yeah, that was... It was such a bringing me back down to earth, that that's the challenges that we're still facing in our community today.
Well, it does help having someone like yourself there in Parliament who actually is touched personally by, you know, someone who is transgender, married, you know, being married to Penny still and being in a loving relationship. It just helps having someone like yourself there who can stand there and just shake your head and go, you got to be kidding me.
Exactly. And it really, you know, it does, you know, make the personal being political to me. And I just, you know, I've got that connection, and it's something that I'm really passionate about. And yes, and I just get riled up so much. I mean, I don't know how many people put themselves through watching Q&A last night. But to hear, you know, Lyle Shelton from the Australian Christian Lobby, again, he was basically just saying, I was sitting there next to Penny, you know, sitting on the couch, in fact, in my Parliament House office. And he was basically saying that trans people don't exist. You're just confused. and then there are other, you know, National Party Senator Barry O'Sullivan during the week, who, when, you know, asked about why he didn't support the work of the same-sex coalition, was basically saying, oh, you know, young people, they're just sexually confused. And it's denying that there are same-sex attracted and gender diverse people in our society. And it's just so backward, so homophobic and transphobic, and we've got to call it out. And I know that, you know, there is such an amount of support. I mean, it's one indication of that is Corey Bernardi in his speech last Monday was talking about his petition of 9,000 people to review the Safe Schools Coalition, which very sadly Malcolm Turnbull then caved into. It wasn't just corralled as the late night raidings of that homophobic dinosaur, but our Prime Minister gave into it. Mm. But I've lost my train of thought.
Well, I was going to say because you get a lot of just very quickly this short amount of time we've got left. How many signatures did you get for your petition?
That's right. That's what I was going to say. He had 9,400. So we then immediately launched a petition the following day, and we're now over 30,000.
Yeah.
So
guess
that
what?
Really shows the level of support that's out there in the community and people. thank you. And how the majority of Australians are with us, and we know that. We know that these Liberal politicians, they are so backward, they are out of step with the community. They are living back in the 19th, let alone the 20th century.
It is a bit like that.
It is, that's right. And I think there's not much hope for some of those. They're never going to catch up. We just need to turf them out.
Yeah, definitely. Look, Janet, unfortunately, we have run out of time, but I'll tell you what, I'd like to get you back, if that's okay. Maybe in a couple of weeks if we give you a call and make contact again. Is that okay?
That would be great. That would be terrific. Okay.
Look, thank you so much for joining us and happy anniversary. And we'll speak to you again.
Thank you very much. Thanks, Janet. I'll go back and have another glass of wine with Penny. Okay.
Good girl.
Thank you. Good night.
Thanks. That was Senator Janet Rice, and you are listening to Transpositions on Joy 94.9. We got a really interesting message.
Yeah, it's funny. People don't realize that if you actually type in their phone number to like Facebook, you can actually see who they are. So we put out a news article around something positive around Caitlyn Jenner. And, my thing is if you're going to listen to the show and you're going to put something negative and as a message, then pretty much don't listen to the show. So we got basically an SMS that came in, says not Caitlyn Jenner, but Bruce Jenner. And, that's just ignorant.
Yeah, that is ignorant. Probably a bit of a call out to that person is, how are you to know who Caitlyn's identity is? Yeah. Ultimately, Caitlyn knows who her identity is, and obviously you're in no position whatsoever to make that call.
I mean, it's so easy to go and actually, because I've looked up who they are, and I could easily just say who you are. But it's just ignorant, and I'm not going to be that ignorant myself. But, and that's the thing, I don't get riled up very often, but to do something like that is just ignorant.
Yeah, I think that's pretty ignorant, unfortunately. Look, you're listening to Transpositions. Now, we do have a really good guest on the phone, Dr. Michelle Telfer. Dr. Michelle, how are you?
I'm well, thanks, Megan. How are you?
Very good. Thank you. So thank you for joining us again on quite an auspicious night.
Yes, thank you.
So there's been a lot of sort of really interesting things going on, but look, obviously, sort of talking about where we were with Janet Rice, big things happened Monday last week. From your perspective, how important was the event last week?
Look, it was a really important day for transgender children and adolescents throughout Australia. We had fantastic session with the Parliamentary Friends of LGBTI Australians, with people represented from all parties and independents, and there was a real sense of hope in the room and positivity, and a real sense that we could bring about change with the cross-party support that was there. We also had a number of meetings throughout the day with people who would be very important in writing the legislation. So we met with the team from George Brandis's office, his advisors to the family court and others that were going to help write the legislation. And also had meetings with MPs from Labor and the Greens, of Janet Rice, obviously organising much of the day's event. So it was a fantastic day, and I really hope that things flow on from it and soon. That would be fantastic.
So Michelle, are you things have been such a whirlwind lately. So are you taking time out and at least having a glass of red and planning your next holiday so you can get away from all of this?
Oh, it has been an intense week with so much in the media, so many views being put forward and so much misinformation that we've been asked to respond to. But most of all, I think I certainly haven't been able to sort of sit back and take it easy, because the effect of all this negativity and debate out in public is that it really does affect the trans children, the adolescents and their families. And we've seen increasing distress in our clinics with people feeling that they're being used in this debate unfairly and cruelly to forward people's agendas, and that's actually been quite distressing for us too to witness.
I think I was reading an article just recently as well that after the announcement of the safe schools being under investigation and everything, that there was an increase in requests for mental health inquiries to go to their doctors and GPs, Garcia and psychiatrists and stuff, because out of the stress from this.
Yeah, and I can certainly back that we've also seen a lot of distress, and we refer pretty much every single patient that we see to the Safe Schools Coalition. So a lot of the schools that these children or adolescents attend are already signed up to the Safe Schools Coalition. Many families check out whether the school has signed up before looking into enrolling their children there. And we depend so much on this fantastic program that we as a service were worried and still are worried about some of the comments going around, because they really do misrepresent the great work that the Safe Schools Coalition does. And of course, if you're taking one of the most important supports away from these young people, they're going to feel distressed. They're going to feel distressed at the possibility that that might happen. So, and I have also seen those reports from a number of other support agencies saying that they are receiving a spike in requests for assistance, and that's understandable.
I know that one of the things which was said with regards to some of the myths and rumours and things like that which are going around at the moment is with regards to 80% of gender non-conforming children and not identifying or not going through transition. What's your sort of professional view and commentary on that?
Yeah, look, it's a really good question, because those statistics of that only 20% of gender non-conforming children will persist with a cross-gender identity into adolescence have been used for a very long time and haven't really been questioned in recent times, because there hasn't been new data to back those statistics up. What we know is that those studies are quite old now, and a number of those studies were conducted by a researcher very well known in transgender academic circles called Ken Zucker. And Ken has done a lot of research through his gender service in Toronto, and that service has recently been shut down following an independent review conducted in Canada because of concerns that there were reparative or conversion therapy happening, or there was that therapy happening in the clinic. So we're left with questions of, if this clinic is conducting reparative therapy on children and the children are in this therapeutic environment, not supportive, potentially with parental environment or home environments that aren't supportive, then how many of these kids aren't necessarily persisting, but how many of them are just suppressing their true feelings about themselves and then coming out later in life as identifying as trans when they are in a different environment? So that's one question. Yeah. The other question is that the studies don't really define what gender non-conforming behaviour might be. So these aren't children who have a persistent and insistent gender identity that's different from their sex assigned at birth. So how many of those kids were never trans? to begin with, or gender diverse to begin with, how many of them were just having or displaying some behaviours which we certainly would consider normal, but added to a lesser degree than ever getting a diagnosis. So I don't think we can quote those figures, and they're often used as a reason not to allow young people to transition. I think that's really unfair, and I think it's a misuse of that, those numbers, really. What we see in our clinic at the Royal Children's, and this is backed up by a number of my colleagues who work in various places internationally, is that for those young children who are really persistent and insistent that their gender identity is different from that assigned at birth, they persist into adolescence. And once all kids get to adolescence, doesn't matter what their history is, if they identify as gender diverse after puberty starts, so this is as young as 10, 11 or 12, then they persist at a rate that is greater than 99%.
We have Dr. Michelle Telfer on the line.
We're Royal Children's Hospital.
Royal Children's Hospital, discussing different myths and things were brought up over the past week, and especially last night on Q&A. No?
Yes. It was an interesting show, wasn't it,
interesting.
Michelle?
Oh, yes. Hello. Sorry. Confusing.
She fell asleep.
I should call you Dr. Michelle.
Dr. Michelle. Oh. Now, Dr. Michelle, one of the things I've seen come up several times is reference to Johns Hopkins. Now, we've been doing... No, look, we're just a... We're just a little radio show here, you know. We're not some big organization out there, huh?
Don't talk yourself down.
No, but I mean, we can easily go on the Googles and do our own level of research, right? And so the data that's being brought up is coming back from the 1970s, and this is data that even Johns Hopkins doesn't even stand with on. And so I'm just baffled as to why Johns Hopkins data keeps coming up.
Yeah, because what I see, the data was from back in 1979. It was a study conducted by Mayer and Ryder at Johns Hopkins. And from what I've seen, it says it found that there was no difference in the adjustment between people who had surgery versus those who didn't. There were major flaws with how they measured adjustment. And they didn't actually look at regret either. So what's your comment on this study?
Well, I'm not particularly familiar with that study, but what's been really interesting with the data that's been brought up about Johns Hopkins, and I think one of the reasons that it came out on the show last night on Q&A was that there have been quotes from around studies which the psychiatrist at Johns Hopkins Hospital used to close down their surgical procedures there. So there was the one back from the 1970s. There was also a study done in Sweden that was published in 2011, which looked at suicide rates for adults. So we don't do surgery in children, but for adults who'd had surgery, the suicide rates were much higher than the general population. And this study was on Q&A, was quoted on Q&A last night as a reason why surgical procedures are not necessary in trans adults. But if you actually look at the study, what the study showed was that the surgery did relieve gender dysphoria, but the suicide rates remain high, likely because that although the person might have changed physically with surgery, society hasn't changed postoperatively. So this, the individual who would have been studied still faced the stigma, the discrimination, the exclusion, the harassment and so forth, which leads, as we know, to depression, anxiety, self-harm and suicide. So the study actually said the surgery does help, but what is also required is the psychological support to cope with the negativity that's brought on by societal attitudes.
I'm glad you said all that, because it was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you, was on the tip of my tongue. And even, I know, Mingzi and myself, when we were interacting with different people on Facebook or different forums or whatever, that most people who we find that when they do actually decide to take their own life, it's usually around things like that with society and not being able to find employment and family pushing them away. And that would be just too much for anyone.
That's right. And the trans community aren't inherently more likely to self-harm or suicide. It's society's response and society's reaction to those who are gender diverse or who express themselves differently that causes the mental health implications that we see all the time.
Which is kind of really disconcerting. One of the things that I wanted to talk about as well is regretters, and that is people who regret transitioning. Now, last year here on Transpositions, we spoke to Dr. Fintan Hart, and he gave us a bit of a sort of a spiel about it. I was going to play an extract of the interview that we did with Fintan, but I think with the time that we've got, we are probably a bit pressed for time. But I did reach out to another medical professional earlier today who's from also the Gendered Sorority Unit at Southern Health. And what he said to me, he said, as for regret, well, again, depends on how you measure it universally. The rates are about 1% to 2% and have been decreasing over the years. In Melbourne, our clinic experiences suggest that the rate is less than 1%. People who have regretted either have had significant mental health problems which weren't assessed or underwent surgery for the wrong reasons. Some people may regret the impact it has had on their families. Social harassment may also trigger feelings of regret as well. Now, when I listened to Fintan as well, he said that there's some people who went through this. They didn't display the classic signs of gender dysphoria with distress from an early age of a child. It's something that they decided just to do on a Sunday afternoon. Thought, you know what, I'm going to transition. Is that something that you see with your practice with children at all?
Well, I think it's quite different with children because they often come in with their parents and hopefully with the support of those parents that are bringing them in. And we have a very regimented structure. We've got a clinical pathway at the hospital which involves multiple assessments over time. And sometimes if the children come in very young, we have the benefit of a number of years of watching and waiting and seeing how they go socially with transitioning and so forth, so that when they go into puberty, we can be absolutely certain that it's the right thing for that child in that family. With others who present a bit later in adolescence, again, we're getting the perceptions from the family and that young person, and everyone still needs to go through a thorough assessment before we would start any treatment. So we have that benefit with the young people.
One of the things that I also wanted to touch on as well is there's a lot of, perhaps, and you can probably qualify this, misinformation which talks about penis tucking and also about breast bonding. I think the thing about penis tucking, what's been thrown around is that it makes someone infertile. Is that true?
Yeah. I've heard people talk about this so much over the last week, and there is absolutely no evidence whatsoever that it does any harm to tuck your penis in, to flatten your profile to look more feminine. Like, no harm whatsoever. And I have to say, as a paediatrician who specialises in adolescent medicine, popping your penis between your own legs is probably one of the safest places you can put it. In terms of the comments made about infertility and so forth, I see a lot of young people engaged in heterosexual sex and other forms of sex who pick up sexually transmitted infections that cause infertility, things like chlamydia and so forth. So in terms of penis tucking, gosh, that's absolutely a very safe thing to do, and certainly is something that young people who feel that that's how they wish to carry themselves is totally fine.
Now, with the limited with the limited amount of time that we've got, what about with binding?
Yeah, binding's a bit same in terms of using regular binders that you would buy. Most of them are made in China or in the States, and they're very safe to use. There have been instances of people trying to bind with tape and so forth and do it really tightly, that they've needed to redo it so it's a bit more comfortable and easy to breathe. But certainly there is no long-term consequence from binding the chest.
Now, Michelle, one of the things that came up talking to parents of transgender kids and even amongst myself and Migsy here, after watching the Q&A show last night, what were your feelings on the fact that we're watching a panel of people who don't identify as any kind of gender diverse or are trans, and then even in the audience didn't appear to be anybody who was trans-related or even trans speaking up or having a voice within this session?
Mm. Well, that is really interesting, and I think Karen Phelps made a really good comment at one stage. She said, have any of you even met a trans person? Because that's exactly how it felt, that there seemed to be a lot of discussion about the trans and gender diverse population, but without hearing it firsthand. And I'm not sure if there were trans people in the audience. Obviously, there were family members of trans children who spoke up, but I think it's extremely difficult when the environment is so adversarial. If you've got someone who is so outspoken and putting forward views that are homophobic and transphobic, then it's not a safe place to and a comfortable space to say, you're talking about me or you're talking about my family or my friends. And it's, I think it's very difficult when someone of the nature that were some of the people that were on the panel or given the opportunity to speak, when they're given that platform, it's very hard to have a balanced discussion. And I think we should look at providing a safer space to discuss these issues.
Yeah, look, Dr. Michelle, obviously we're nailing this one to the wall. There's so much we could honestly discuss on this. And again, you know, you've got a group, a panel, a whole room of people discussing our lives and our future, and we're not even there to go and have a voice, a representation to do it, which is quite disappointing.
Yeah, which has been unfortunate. Dr. Michelle, unfortunately, we are out of time. But look, thank you so much for joining us tonight, and hopefully we get to talk to you again.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me on the show.
It's great talking to you. Thank you, Doctor. So, Michelle, unfortunately, it has come to...
It has.
...the end of the show.
Like I said, we're really going to nail this one.
So we've got lots more to talk about. Don't go far, Transpositions. We're back next week talking about Mardi Gras. You've been listening to Joy 94.9.
Chat to you then.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.